welcome to another episode of the William Branham Historical Research Podcast. I'm your host, John Collins, the author and founder of William Branham Historical Research at william-branham.org, and with me I have my co-host, researcher, and friend, James Goad. And together, we're discussing the very weird things that preachers say, why they say them, and how they relate back to the latter rain healing revivals of the late 1940s through the 1960s. James, today we have a interesting yet solemn episode. Usually the ones that you and I do are, I have trouble not laughing through them because they're some of the doctrines are just so hysterically funny. But in this case, we actually have a serious topic to discuss. It is a weird doctrine, and it is by far, out of everything that we've discussed, it's by far one of the architectural pillars that all of this was built upon. And we are discussing what all of these ministers in latter rain called the gospel. William Branham correctly called it the gospel of divine healing because it is different from the gospel of Jesus Christ that you find in the Bible. You've got the gospel of divine healing, which claims that salvation is dependent upon your ability to faith heal yourself.
Now, the only way you can be saved is to accept what he's already done. And he, by his stripes, we were healed at Calvary. See? And you just have to accept what he's done. Is that right? Now, the ministers, many of them preach the gospel of divine healing. You accept it, it's just the same results.
If you look at some of the leaders that we've examined in the past, John Alexander Dowie being probably the prototype for all of this, what they did was they took Christianity, or they called it quote-unquote Christianity, I should say, and then they stepped up with their snake oil salesman faith healing gimmick and said, if you are a Christian, you must also believe that you can be healed as long as you are looking towards me, your great and faithful cult leader, and I will give you the ability to heal yourself. And so with all of that laid, F.F. Bosworth, you know, taught this to William Branham, as well as did Roy Davis, who was also a faith healer and swindler of people. And William Branham brought this into the healing revivals. He was the leader of the post-World War II healing revival and taught all of these guys the quote-unquote gospel of divine healing. For them, they raked in great amounts of money, but then what happened afterward is what we're discussing today. Now you have leaders who are a part of this, and what happens is as we get old as humans, we have health problems as humans. It's part of life. You have health problems, you go to a doctor. Well, many of these men who have preached for years how God can heal you and have tried to manipulate the people so that they have the inward desire not to seek medical care. Well, many of these men are getting older and their bodies are falling apart, which brings us to today's discussion, the gospel of divine healing.
Right, and this gospel of divine healing is very interesting when you look at the things that Branham said to set this out. And you can find, you know, I mean, you just go through his transcripts of all of his sermons and you can really put together a very interesting timeline and a very interesting history, especially around the portions of his ministry when he was being questioned about his healings and stuff like that, because you can start to see where he's combating the accusations of false healings and things like that, and in some of the ways that Branham defends his healing ministry, there's some very interesting things that get said. And I kind of wanted to lay the foundation here and pull from some of Branham's quotes here to sort of see what did the man say. And then as we move forward into seeing what some of these guys are saying today, I think it'll help build the foundation of where these guys are pulling some of their stuff from. But so this first quote here, Branham says, "If I prayed for a person and I tell them they're going to live, I believe they're going to live, but no matter, if my word was absolutely thus saith the Lord, and you would disbelieve it, you'd die anyhow. Certainly, there is a thus saith the Lord, and many of them receive it and die. Many of them go to hell, when thus saith the Lord, you don't have to. Is that right? He's asking the congregation. He says, sure. See, it's all based on your faith, which is very interesting, because he's talking about the healing is directly tied to the faith, which this has been completely gone through ad nauseum through many of the episodes. And there's a lot of episodes, if you want to dig in deeper on that subject, there's a ton of material on this channel. But one of the more interesting things is when you step into something more specific. So even like cancer, for instance, here's one of his quotes about cancer. And I think this will definitely be very interesting as we go on. So he says, well, what about a lump of dead flesh lying in your body? Well, you'll almost go through death. That's the time to stand and give God the praise. Don't waver in your faith. That's exactly the truth, that you're healed. See? Well, if we'd kept the cancers that passed through the people one year, I believe it was, we had so many jugs and bottles we couldn't even put them on the platform to show the people when they'd passed out, doctors' names written on them, that's right. If a growth had passed, it'll die, turn loose, and adhesions and things. It'll pass from you if it can. If it can't, then you're going to get sick, because it'll lay there. In plain words, where the simplest the child would understand, the only way I know to put it, it'll rot. It's laying there, rotting in your body, and when it does, your heart stream, your bloodstream is being purified by your heart, and it picks up that and causes sickness and headaches, and oh, you can't stand up hardly. And the person immediately, the patient, weak in faith, will say, I've lost my healing. Why, God's not that kind of father. You can't lose your healing. Jesus purchased it. It's yours. When Jesus prayed for Peter, say, I pray that your faith will fail not, not his morals, because they did, but that your faith fail not. See? And so what's interesting here, there's a lot of interesting things here in what Branham says. As always, there's so many things to unpack. But one of the interesting things that he talks about is that the healing has gone to the person that's praying, that's wanting healing. And God chose to heal them, but he didn't choose to remove the cancerous tumor. The tumor's still there, and immediately in the meeting, they're going to feel good. They're going to feel like, I've got my healing, I'm great. And then within, like, a lot of times you see this repeated, like 2 to 3 days, that they start to feel sickness. They're like, oh, well, you know, I'm not feeling good now, you know. And then they'll go to the doctor, and they'll still say, well, you've got a tumor or this or that. But then Branham would say, well, yeah, the flesh of that tumor is still there, but there's no life in it, because God took the life from it. And that's just there to as a challenge to your faith, because if you lose your faith, then you're going to lose your healing. And it's one of the very sinister things about the message. And there's a lot of people who desperately in their lives, they come to a point where they're at a crossroads, and they desperately need some sort of a miracle in their life, because especially if they get to the point where doctors have, you know, kind of written them off and said, well, we've done all we can for you. We're still working. We're still going to try to help you and get you through this. But, you know, we don't really know, you know, the numbers say this, or, you know, maybe you've got 2 weeks, maybe you've got 2 months. And so some people reach points in that where they're desperate and they're looking for something. And so they'll turn to people like this because they claim to have an answer. They claim to have a healing ministry, or they can heal, or they know somebody who can, or they can influence this situation in your life. And then, you know, things like this happen where they go to a man that says, you're healed, but now 3 days from now, if you start to feel bad, it's not that I didn't heal you, or I don't have the power to heal you, or that it didn't happen. It's that this tumor is there, or this dead flesh of a tumor is left there to challenge your faith, because reasons. You know, it doesn't quite make sense when you dissect it, but, you know, that's just that's sort of the foundation of what a lot of these healing ministries that stem from the message are built on.
Yeah. And, you know, what's fascinating to me, when you look at the early stages of this whole movement, you go back to John Alexander Dowie, and he had this satchel that he carried from from stage show to stage show, we'll call it that, where he pulls out letters of testimonies of people, and he will tell the people that, look, I have a testimony, this person was healed in this other city. In other words, You just have to take my word for it. You can't go see that they're healed. And initially this worked, which is fascinating to me, but the newspaper reporters caught on, wait a minute, this guy's scamming us. He's never yet healed a person in the same city of which he holds a meeting. So from town to town, he's got all of these satchel of letters, right? Well, as this progressed and, you know, these guys refined this over time, there were all kinds of different stage tricks. There are, you can see documentaries, for example, of Jim Jones, and he would pray for the lady and he would drop a chicken gizzard. And look, a cancer fell from the body. And when I was in this cult, I thought, you know, William Branham would never do that. But you take a step back and you look at some of the things that he claimed, like this. We have jugs and jugs of these cancer that fell out. Well, people in today's world, they realize that, no, it doesn't really work that way. A cancer doesn't just fall out onto the ground. And so they have to refine their stage act even more. And Branham also was one of these guys that he says, we have boxes and boxes of testimonies from doctors who have said this person is cured with no medical explanation, but yet nobody's ever seen these boxes, right? And if you write into headquarters, which some of the former members have, they say, they're missing, or some, I can't remember how they said it, but it was something like this. They just disappeared. We no longer have all of these things that make our prophet guy credible. And so what happens is, sadly, you have a lot of ministers in the message who were duped by the same stage tricks. Some of them, I think, knew they were stage tricks. My grandfather, for instance, always talked about how William Branham could straighten legs, and he did it at every one of his meetings. And now in today's world, everybody's seen the thing where the person sits slightly twisted and they pull the leg, and look, this leg just grew magically right in front of you. People today wouldn't fall for it. My grandfather had to have known that that was fake. I mean, my grandpa was pretty smart. I have no doubt he knew. But not all of them. Some of the men truly believed it. And so now you enter this weird, I said this was getting solemn, and it is. You get in this weird place where a minister gets sick, and he truly believes in this gospel of faith healing, this gospel of divine healing, they call it. So he, you know, like any normal person, is going to pray for his body to be healed. And I want to make sure that we stress the fact that we're not ridiculing this at all. That's the good part of this. That is the thing where I agree, he should pray, God can heal. But the part that they always miss is that God does not always heal every person in every case. And so they push the issue, and in doing so, they turn this into a weird doctrine. It's a mess. But that sets the stage for where we're headed.
Right. And like John just said, I mean, you know, there's one thing that, looking at these weird doctrines and looking at all this stuff, one thing that can't be missed is the human element. Because at the end of the day, all these people are still human beings. And I think that that's something that, while some choose the route in these movements of dehumanizing those who maybe point out facts and errors with the things that what they say, I mean, I don't ever want to get to the point where I'm personally dehumanizing somebody, especially somebody who's dealing with something so, like, you know, stage four cancer that's just rifling through their body, you know, because you've got a family, you've got loved ones, you've got a wife, you've got children, you know, there's people who care about these people, and they want to see you know, something good come out of it, and they want to see a, you know, a complete restoration. But What gets messy, as John alluded to, is when you base your ministry, and especially the healing portion, on Branham's healing ministry. There's a lot of things that Branham did and Branham said that, one, or, you know, medical science completely debunks, especially when it comes to talking about cancers and stuff like that. There's so many examples. We don't have time to get into all of them today, but, you know, there's all this stuff gets preached and propagated to the members in the congregation, and this thing about the faith has to be at a certain level to receive the healing, and cancer to the people in this group is such a big demon, as they would put it in their words. It's a big devil, and so it's going to take more faith to knock it down. And so a lot of times what happens is they tend to conscript the faith of the members of the congregation and say that we've all got to believe together to take down this demon of cancer in our brother and our friend or whoever it is. And that by itself may not sound insidious, but when you look at the thing that, okay, somebody comes up for prayer in this group and they say, okay, I have this thing going on, maybe I have cancer, maybe I have some other thing going on in me, and then they'll pray for them and they'll say, okay, God gave you your healing, you are healed. And then if the person is still struggling with that after that, there is a tendency in some of these groups to say, okay, well, you know, God healed you and then you're still not well, therefore you must have done something wrong, your faith must have wavered, because God did heal you, but according to Branham, the man who these people believe to be their prophet, their last messenger to the final age, you know, said that if you lose your faith or your faith even stumbles just slightly, you know, the life itself will come back into the cancer. And That's a very, very damaging and very interesting thing that I wanted to take a look at here, just kind of start us out with. But yeah, let's roll into this clip and take a look.
God can perform a miracle. And if God performs a miracle, the tumor will completely just fall off or disappear. Amen. But then God also, amen, there's also such a thing as divine healing. Now, divine healing is a process. Now, that's where the part I want to deal with and show you this principle, because Brother Brown said somebody will come up and get prayed for. He said, and God, amen, will heal them. And you know what'll happen? The Spirit of God will curse the life that is in that tumor. Now, Brother Brown said the tumor is still there, but the life has left it. Amen. But the thing about it is, and the person feels better. They feel better. But then, in about 72 hours, see, 3 days, what's going to happen? Because the life has left it. Brother Brown said, now corruption's going to set in. But corruption, not in the body, but in that cancer, because it's dead. And he said, when it does, it'll begin to swell and the person will feel sick. You can see it clearly with somebody had a tumor on their eyes. They come up in the prayer line, brother, you know, they'd be prayed for, they're healed. They can see. Amen. They can see. They feel better. They can see. But then 3 days later, that thing begins to swell. Amen. Their eyesight begins to, and watch. Amen. The prophet of God said, amen, when them symptoms begin to come back and they begin to feel bad again, amen, you know what they'll do? Satan is right there. He's right there to say, you didn't get your healing. You never was healed. It didn't really happen. And he said, if you ain't careful, unbelief will resurrect the life that was in that cancer.
You know, this for me is really sad, because there are a lot of people suffering with terminal illnesses that I have known. I've watched people die in this movement, and they believe to their dying breath that they were healed. And no matter how you twist it, they were not healed if they died of the disease that God allegedly healed them from. And it's somewhat different now, because William Branham's dead. I mean, when he was alive and he said, you are healed, you could say, well, you are a false prophet when the person died. Now we're after this, and these ministers have a real easy job, right? Because they say, well, I pray for you just like William Branham and you're healed. But then if you don't get healed, well, it's not my fault, you know. But what's interesting is, just like Branham, they also give themselves an out. If it comes back, then you really didn't believe, or you have sin in your life, whatever it is. They'll turn it on the victim and further victimize the victim.
Right. And that's what's so damaging to so many people, because, I mean, they're just desperate. They're just desperate for a move of God, something to happen in their life to make them well and to give them hope of a future. And then, you know, they're being told that, hey, you know, sorry, but, you know, we did everything we were supposed to do. You were healed. God healed you. But your moment of faith shaking caused the cancer to you know, to life to come back into the cancer, which is so sad because, you know, that is completely different to how anything Jesus did healing in the New Testament, which is what these men should be taking as their example. But sadly, more often than not, they don't take Jesus's healings as their example. They take Branham's alleged healings as their example. And, you know, Branham said that if your faith wavers even the slightest, you know, you could doubt just for a microsecond. And that's the thing. It's not just that you full on say, God isn't real, I don't believe any of this stuff. It's that the doctor says, well, it looks like the cancer is still growing. And then they're scared for half a second. And then even a deeper fear grows inside people because they say, oh no, did I just lose my healing? Did that moment of listening to that doctor make me completely, all the progress I've just made is now gone, which is so completely anti-scriptural, and it's so damaging to people because not only are they dealing with something, let's just say as bad in this situation as maybe cancer, but now they're living in constant fear that they take the wrong step and it's going to get worse because they betrayed God's healing gift that he gave to him, which is so sad.
Right. It is sad. And again, we're not here to talk bad about the people because the people are the victims. In some cases, the victims are ministers, leaders, elders, evangelists, whatever these guys are, but they're further victimized, which is the point that we want to show throughout the course of this particular story that we're going to follow in this episode. And we're leading into the case where a person has a terminal illness and he's in a position of authority. And like everyone in the movement, they pray that God will heal them, which is good. We're not talking bad about this. But as this progresses, we'll see where it heads. And where you end up is, in the end, you know, God ultimately does not heal every person, which is, it's sad. And for the families, we also share your pain because I have family members who have suffered. And the problem is, throughout their lives and throughout their suffering of whatever is the illness, many of them, because this doctrine's in your head that you didn't get healed because you have sin in your life, or you didn't get healed because you didn't believe. Well, to the congregation, the rank and file members, they suffer even further because now they have this thought, well, gosh, what sin do I have? What's causing this? Or, man, I wish I could believe harder. That's how it is. But then there's this distinct separation between the rank and file members and leaders because they can't show themselves as having not sin in their life or having not belief. And that's where this really gets weird.
So moving on into this story here, that's kind of the focus of this episode here. We've got a minister, and this story starts in around the very beginning of 2020. This minister announces that they have cancer. You know, the story quickly spreads across all the different sister churches and all the different churches in the movement that are friendly to this sect. And, you know, the call goes out that we've got to pray for our brother because we want to see a full restoration and we want to see God move in his life. It's also announced at this time that he has stage 4 cancer. So it's progressed really far. You know, and this goes out. And one of the things that is interesting in this first clip is, one of the ministers from a sister church, comes down to pray with and take the services that weekend while the minister is going through his initial, tests and stuff with the doctor to really kind of get to the bottom of, try to get to the bottom of what's going on now that they've discovered that he has this stage 4 cancer. And while he's there with that minister taking the services and then also, you know, being with him at the hospital while he's going through it, he tells his church, his congregation, that he has this dream. Has this dream of, you know, 12 buzzards and pigs, and that, you know, the buzzards are eaten by the pigs, and that when he gets to the doctor, he says that the treatment that they want to put this minister on is what they call an immunotherapy. And he gets on his phone, he starts looking this up. And then he says that the treatment was first tested and grown in pigs, because according to the article that he reads, that the pig physiology in this instance can help mimic human physiology and how the cancer is gonna interact with the in this case would be the example of the human anatomy and stuff. But yeah, so it goes on to this very long thing and how he's not only telling his church this dream, he's also interpreting what the dream means and that the buzzards are the cancers and he feeds them to the pigs. And he also ties this into the story of Legion, where Legion was cast out into the pigs and the pigs went into the sea. And so he says, well, this is biblical because, you know, the buzzards are the cancers and, you know, there's 12 and there's the doctor prescribed 12 treatments. And so this seems to be very, this is presented as though it's a very spiritual, supernatural thing that happened because this minister saw this dream and so many things in his mind line up with what's happening in the physical. And so, let's roll into this clip and let's dive in a bit further.
And all of a sudden the dream come back to me. I told my wife about it the night before. And a dream came back to me of seeing those buzzards and feeding those buzzards to pigs. And all of a sudden, it just came to me that Brother Branham told us, and it's the first, I think it's the first place in diseases and afflictions, the first search on buzzards. He said, in a cancer, in the natural and the spiritual, he's a devil. He types a scavenger and a buzzard. He eats dead things. So now all of a sudden I knew this dream had some significance. And I told Brother, I said, them buzzards, they were cancers. And I was feeding them to pigs. And so, then I was puzzled what the pigs meant. So I was kind of silent for the next ride into the doctor's, and then sitting in the hospital, and I was searching, scanned through nearly 200 quotes on pigs. I couldn't find a clue in the sermons. But when the doctors was talking about treatments and using immunotherapy, I did an internet search on cancer and immunotherapy in pigs and found that they developed this immunotherapy using small pigs like I saw in the dream. In fact, the matter is, I just read a document on it said, and so, they were being fed to pigs and the pigs were gobbling them up. And there was about 12 of them. And I fed them about a dozen pigs one by one. Just see them chopping them up. Now, there's to be about 12 treatments, and after then, he will have a PET scan. And I'm asking you to agree with me and believe with me for this PET scan. It's going to come back all clear, completely well. Amen. Now, this is all biblical. You know, in the Bible, legions of devils were cast out of a man and went into pigs. And the pigs then took them devils to the sea and drowned them. Amen. And as far as the man, he was restored to his family healthy and well. Amen. So we got scriptural evidence. Amen.
Yeah, so James, this for me is the reason why this episode is so important, because for legal reasons, many of these ministers will not tell their congregations, you're not allowed to take medicine, which is, when you trace its history, that's what happened with John Alexander Dowie's cult and many of the cults that sprung up immediately after the death of Dowie, well, some during the death of Dowie, until it turned into a situation where these guys that were doing this were held liable for the deaths of the people. And suddenly they all had this divine inspiration that it was okay to take medicine, but instead what we're going to do is try to manipulate the people not to take it through the same foundational doctrine. And if you trace the history forward through William Branham and the Latter Rain revivals, through their splinter groups, etc., that's where it has ended up now. They won't come out and say, don't take your medicine, although There are some that still do, but for the most part, most of them do not. Instead, they will manipulate you by tying your healing to your faith. And if you believe, you wouldn't take the medicine in the first place because God has healed you. But these same ministers who claim this, when they take the medicine, it's always a spiritual thing. They always want to twist it. I had a dream. I had a vision. I had this supernatural thing happen to me. And so therefore, me, as the person who has tried to manipulate you not to take your medicine, it's okay if I take mine. Have you ever wondered how the Pentecostal movement started, or how the progression of modern Pentecostalism transitioned through the latter rain, charismatic, and other fringe movements into the new apostolic reformation? You can learn this and more on William Branham Historical Research's website, william-branham.org. On the books page of the website, you can find the compiled research of John Collins, Charles Paisley, Stephen Montgomery, John McKinnon, and others, with links to the paper, audio, and digital versions of each book. You can also find resources and documentation on various people and topics related to those movements. If you want to contribute to the cause, you can support the podcast by clicking the Contribute button at the top. And as always, be sure to like and subscribe to the audio or video version that you're listening to or watching. On behalf of William Branham Historical Research, we want to thank you for your support.
What's interesting about this particular situation is the minister has also announced publicly over the pulpit many times the medicine costs, according to them, cost them about $30,000 a month. That's a decent chunk of change. And I know that there's not probably very many people, if at all, in their congregations that could afford a medical bill like that. And what is so interesting is as we'll go on in all of the reports of this particular thing is that the minister appears to be taking from what it can glean from what's publicly said, appears to be taking a very aggressive, cutting edge, very expensive, cancer treatment to try to take out this cancer. And so it's something interesting of note. It doesn't necessarily, damn the minister one way or another. But like John said, it also depends on the sect, because if your sect is very anti-medicine, then this would be considered as a very like, well, you know, we prayed, there was a dream, all these things. So you don't even need the medicine. But this minister, for his particular instance, has chosen to take the medicine. And I'm very pro medicine in this situation. I'm very glad the minister has chosen to take medicine for this, because I think that trusting in your doctors in this situation is a very good thing to do. Wherever it leads, I think that it's a positive. I think that taking the medicine should be encouraged for the most part, and that I definitely believe that. But you know, moving on from this thing, so we've got the dream. This other minister interprets this dream that he claims to have had, and that he conscripts his entire congregation that, you know, they've got to believe with him that the PET scan is going to come back completely clear. And keep in mind that this is back in very beginning of 2020. Now, interesting things start happening when we start examining sort of how this spreads through the various sects and groups in this movement, because these things propagate and stories, and sometimes you get some very wild and interesting stories. And one of the things we have here is a minister claiming that this story comes directly from the minister in question with the cancer, and that when the doctors tried to probe the cancer to try to get a sample of it, as they're in their very early stages trying to get to the bottom of what type of cancer it is and really start of get a plan going here, that something miraculous and supernatural begins to happen, that in this minister's version of the story, that the cancer itself starts to try to physically move away from the doctor's instrument so that it can't be detected, even though the doctor has clearly detected it and the doctor can see it, and they're trying to literally get a sample of it. According to the story, they've got a camera on it and they can see it. But yeah, let's listen to this minister's take on it and see what we think.
The devil's greatest work, the devil's best work, is done when he hides. He does a lot of things in hiding. He does a lot of things in secret. Cancer is so insidious because it hides so well. Some of the medical people here are nodding their heads. They'll tell you that, you know, they can do blood tests, they can do scans, they can do this, they can do something else, they can do, you know, and they can miss it and miss it and miss it, and all of a sudden, bang, it'll show up because they're looking at it maybe from a different angle, using a different tool, using something else. Told me yesterday in the hospital, he said, I know you'll use this to preach on it, so he said, I'll tell you this in a way that you can use it. He said when he was doing the biopsy in his lungs, they did not anesthetize him. They didn't put him out completely. They just numbed him so they could go in with the needle, and I'm sparing you some of the details, but they could go in and they could extract some of that and take it out and then do the, sorry, won't be long here, and they could do the analysis of it, but they had to go in. But they didn't put him out. He said, I was laying on the bed and I was watching this on a monitor. He said, I'm looking at my lungs on the monitor right here, and there's a screen so he can't physically see it, but he can see what's going on inside. They have a little camera on the end of that, right? And they were in there probing, and he's looking at the end of this needle. Listen. He's looking at the end of this needle and is moving in there to try to get a sample of that spot, that black spot that's on the screen. He can figure it out. He's not a doctor, but he can figure it out. And he said, this is the way he said it. When that needle came in there, he said, and it was going towards this black spot, he said that thing began to quiver and pull back. And he said, the doctor told him, he said, there's actually a life in this thing. This is what the doctor told him. There's a life in this thing. And when the needle was moving towards it, it began to jiggle and move back away from the needle because it knew it did not want to have the discovery. It didn't want to have that needle extract anything from the inside of that because it's so covered over with a shell. It's kind of a waxy substance. It's a shell. And that actual entity, that mass, did not want to have that piercing done to extract that and find out what it really is. Because you know what? When that comes out, we know exactly what this is. The devil's job is always to hide.
And just like the last one we played, this is also further complicating the problem with all of this mess, all of this weird doctrine. Because by nature, cancer, especially in its latter stages, it spreads throughout the body, and it's hard to find. Sometimes you can go through the treatments, and the cancer will go into remission, hopefully long-term, but sometimes short-term, but it has spread through the body, and it can come in other places. Whenever people hear this kind of thing, especially, try to picture the people who are in the congregation who have cancer and who are going to doctors, and they have little hope because their cancer has spread and they understand that all of this is spreading. Think of what that's doing to those people. It is not only further victimizing them, it's also causing them anguish because here's the guy on the platform who has this supernatural, mysterious, dodging cancer, dodging instrument, supernatural weirdness, I'll just call it like that. But they themselves are going through treatment and they see the thing happen, but they can't claim supernatural because they're not some prophet, apostle, pastor, teacher. They're not a fivefold leader over the rank and file members. They're just a rank and file member. So then they start to feel inferior to the person who is on stage who's saying these things, or like in this case, another guy who's saying it to them. But they're victimizing the people who have the deadly disease. And for me, that is just so problematic.
It's tough because, you know, what a lot of these ministers appear to be doing, if you give them the benefit of the doubt, is that because faith is such a big part of how they look at divine healing in their groups, that the more faith, the better. So if you tell the church, the congregation, these stories that helps build their faith, then, you know, you just take and add up everybody's faith together, and therefore you've got a super weapon of faith to attack, this minister's sickness. And, while in a normal situation, you look at it and say, maybe that's fine. But the thing about it is that how in this movement, it's weaponized. It's, you know, it's in this situation, we're all believing for our brother. But in your situation, it might be, well, you know, if you've still got the cancer, brother, sister, maybe this problem's you. So that's something interesting to keep in mind as we keep going through this, that, you know, while some things, you know, presented as though they are, they might seem fine in a normal setting, but one thing to keep in mind is that we're not in a normal setting here. We're in a message setting, and message settings tend to lean very heavily into the bizarre and weird when you start tracing all their doctrines to the root and seeing what was actually said. But so that story is quite interesting of the cancer physically moving while the doctor is literally has it on camera, and they see the cancer moving because they say that the Satan's trying to hide. It's very interesting. You know, and these stories get propagated and people hear these things and people don't know. And it sounds like they're telling them the truth. Like, you know, and I don't know. I wasn't there. I can't say what the cancer did, didn't do. I just know from what I know about cancer, that doesn't seem to be something that is going to quite happen on camera. But these things spread and go on. Now we're getting further into the first year of this cancer being known about, and getting later on. And one thing that this minister says when he's approaching his congregation about the cancer is that he asks his doctor, you know, how long will I be stage four, and when will I no longer be stage four? And the doctor responds and replies to him, "You will be stage four until the day you die." Which is a very sad and solemn report for someone to get from a doctor. It's not something that anybody wants to hear. But it's very interesting to keep that in mind as we go through and further into some of these more things about where we go and what is said about this particular minister's situation. But for now, let's roll into this clip here, and we'll see what he says.
Amen. Just as a report for you, I had two cancer appointments, actually many more than that, but cancer appointments this week, and sometimes they just scratch their heads and say, "Well, we don't even know." And so we just chuckle, Sister and I just kind of chuckled just before I was going into the appointment. We saw on Facebook if somebody already had the results of my appointments before I even walked in. And so let me just give you the straight of it. I take treatments every day, and that is basically immunotherapy treatments. I take 8 pills a day, and cancer's in my lungs and in my brains and in my lymph nodes. And they're fighting them, and they're changing. They're doing some different transformations of the cancer. It's kind of moving a bit. We're believing they're leaving our body. I don't know. I asked one of the doctors the other day, and I said, when will I not be stage four? And she said, "You'll be stage four till the day that you go home." And so my other doctor says it like this: "Whose report do you believe?" And so we believe that report.
So here is where, for me, James, it gets really sad. And I feel sad for this minister. And I have friends who have lost their life to cancer. I have watched them go through the stages of cancer, and very clearly their body is falling apart by the time you reach stage four. I have seen men who were strong enough. One of the guys, one of my best friends, he was, I think he died in his, I want to say 60s maybe. He was one of my best friends. He was a close friend of the family. He was a Marine who was strong enough that when we moved, he himself picked up my mother's upright piano and set it off of the truck, and then he himself carried it into the house by himself. I mean, I can't even imagine what this thing weighed. It's probably 300-400 pounds. That's the bulk of this man. And he was running, I think he was jogging 7 miles per day up until 2 weeks before he died. And stage four cancer, it's eating his body. So as he's jogging, he's getting thinner and thinner and thinner until one day he collapsed on his run, and it wasn't long before he died. But like this doctor has told this minister, once your body reaches that stage, it's very difficult for it to go into complete remission. You've reached stage four. I do know people that it has gone into remission, but for a large number of people, that is not the case. So it is very sad. And the way that it is presented in this case, he has gone to multiple doctors and he's looking for a second opinion. And in the context of the message, the way it works, if you're in leadership, once you get the diagnosis that is this bad, you'll never recover again, or you're in a faith healing cult, you're going to get a second opinion and you're going to get a third and fourth and fifth and sixth. You're going to get one person who says something contrary to your terminal decision, because that's what you're going to use as your example in the church. Which again, remember the people in the church who are suffering with similar conditions. It's so problematic to them because they may be in his church dying. I don't know. I actually don't know this minister. But there may be people who are extremely sick, who have no hope. And instead of a normal church where the pastor is preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ instead of the gospel of divine healing, the church comes together as a community to comfort the family, to help out any way they can. Hey, you don't feel good today. Can I mow your lawn? All of these things. Well, what it does is not only for the pastor who's doing this, for the people who are suffering in these congregations, they lose the support of the community because now they're seen as, well, if their condition is worsening, well, they must have sin in their lives, or they must not be a believer. They're not a true believer. And so they feel further condemned. And that is the example that is given here. Again, it's very sad what this guy is going through, but think of the difference of what it would be like if he were to simply say, they tell me I may have this the rest of my life. I hope that God heals me. It may not happen, but I would appreciate your prayers if we could all come together and help one another like the Bible describes.
Right. And it's interesting as we go further on here, because now we're getting towards the end of the first year, and this is towards the end of November, right around the very beginning of December of the first year. And like I said, this was originally announced, I believe, back in early February of 2020. So this has been going on for quite a while now. There's been a lot of different reports, a lot of different stories going on. And then this minister here, who is appears to be very closely connected to this, and a lot of reports come through this minister here. The minister with the cancer, went to the doctor, and, they apparently told him that they believed he had melanoma in his eyes. Now, one of the things that originally caused this cancer to be spotted was that, the minister went blind back in the early part of 2020, according to his report. And that incident is what caused him to go to the doctor in the first place. And then that's when they found the cancer. Now, you know, they've told him that they believed he had melanoma in his eyes, and that they believed that's where the cancer had started. And then within a week of the report, now this is later on in the year, towards the very end of the year, they told him within 1 week, they said, we believe cancer is in your eyes. And then he went in for another scan, and they said, we don't think it started there. We don't think the cancer started in your eyes anymore, because there is no cancer in your eyes. Now, this is something that you see quite often in message circles, is that a doctor's report will be a lot of times and can be used to say things that the doctor didn't say. And what the minister goes on to say is that we believe this is a healing. You know, they said in one report, they scanned and said, the cancer is in your eyes. You've got melanoma in your eyes. And then we think that the cancer started there. And then he goes back for another scan and they say that we don't think the cancer started there because we don't think you've got cancer in your eyes. Now I don't know if this is two different doctors, if this is, you know, one specialist on cancer, one specialist on, you know, maybe, you know, eye treatment. You know, I don't really know, but it's very interesting how the slightest change, like the doctor changes their mind on something, and the fact that the doctor changed their mind means that this is healing. You know, it's very interesting to approach it like that. But let's roll into this clip here and take a deeper look.
If we look at circumstances, we'll stagger. We will fall. Amen. I cannot look at the circumstances of our brother, what he's going through. I cannot look at those circumstances. Even though we get little promises and hopes and things that are dropped to us a little bit of time. This week, you know what? One of the great things that happens. Some months ago, he went to an eye doctor, and they looked in his eye and said, "Here, there's cancer in your eyes." Said, "This melanoma, we believe it started there." And there with this melanoma in your eyes, said, "We think it spread from there to other things, and you got melanoma in your eyes." He goes back for another eye exam this week, and they said, "No, we don't think it started there, because there ain't even any cancer in your eyes." Last night he was having a heart attack, and they rushed him to the ER. Before he can get there, all the symptoms are gone. They are baffled, don't know what it was, don't understand what it was. But you see, the devil comes in on one side and on another. But when the saints get to praying, things start changing. Because when omnipotent faith quits looking at the circumstances and looks at the promise, it can only be a faith when it looks at the promise. Otherwise, when it looks at the circumstances, it's only unbelief. But today we stagger not at the promise of God through unbelief, but we're strong in the faith.
So now we're entering in the phase where it becomes part of the name it and claim it gospel. It is obviously the cancer has spread or is still spreading, and there are various locations where the cancer is manifesting itself. And he says towards the end of this, he says, "But I'm healed. God has healed me." And obviously, at least at this point in time, there is not healing because they detect the cancer. There are two sides to the coin. Either you're healed and there is no cancer, or you're not healed and you're just naming it so that you can claim it and pretend that it's not there. And again, this is coming from the leadership. He's not the only one doing this. So we're not singling this minister out, and we feel sorry for him, and we hope that God does heal him. But what he's doing is wrong to the people, especially, again, to the people who are suffering inside of these churches.
You know, as we progress further here, we're moving into sort of a year later now. So we're in February of the following year. So the cancer has been known about for a little over a year at this point, publicly, from the best I've been able to find. And the minister with the cancer goes to his congregation on this service, and starts to tell them about a dream that they had. And in this dream, they were at a meeting, and William Branham was at that meeting. It's a big thing. There's a bunch of people there. It sounds, from the sound of the dream, there's more people than can really fit in the room. So what you're left with the interpretation is that, you know, there's a lot of people desiring to be there more than the building can hold. And so at one point, the Branham in the dream, comes down to the minister, pats him on the cheek and says, "You're going to get well." Which, hey, that's a great dream. I mean, if I was in that movement and I still had Branham on such a high tier, high level in my mind, and I had this, and I was suffering with all this, and I had, you know, I would sit there and go, "Man, that was a great dream. That was really nice to have. You know, I'm suffering with this thing. I it's a constant struggle and it's a constant battle to get up every day and keep pressing forward." But then this prophet who, in quotes here, comes into my dream and tells me I'm going to get well. Well, you know, it doesn't quite end there, because he also says that, he hands him a book in the dream, and then, you know, it's a green book specifically, and the green book is The Way of a True Prophet, which is a Branham, that's a book published by Branham's people. And, you know, the thing about it is this book has a very specific meaning to this minister, because this, in his words, this is the book, or this is the sermon that his own father came to believe that William Branham was a prophet, and this is how he came into the movement.
It seemed like that in the dream we had been invited to a meeting. And it was a meeting to where that looked like a small building, but a massive crowd. Little did I know that Brother Branham was going to be the speaker. Brother Branham was dressed in a very beautiful, beautiful whitish suit. And I just don't have a name quite how the color would be. But it would be somewhere between ivory and white. And Brother Branham walked over to me right after he finished speaking. And he walked over to me and he had a book in his hand. And the book was a green-bound book, and it was one of the original books. I have one in my desk. And it's the way of a true prophet. And that's the sermon that my dad came to the Lord that believed Brother Branham was a prophet. And so I heard that many, many, many times in my life. And Brother Branham just looked at me and said, "Would you like to have this book?" And he just kind of held it out to me like that. When he did, I looked at him and I just looked into his eyes and I said, "Brother Branham, I have believed this message all my life." Amen. Now, this is the first time I've ever dreamed of Brother Branham. I believe this message with all my life. And I preached it all over the world. And I've tried to do my best. And he just looked at me and he said, and he just patted me on the cheek. He said, "You're going to get well." Glory.
It's just so sad. I mean, again, as I'm hearing these, I'm thinking about the people in the congregation. I'm actually not thinking so much about the minister, because everyone in the congregation who is suffering with something that night and day, that's all they can think about, their suffering and their mortality. I mean, let's face it, when you're in this last stage of cancer, you're in the final, the final stages, and your body is telling you that something's wrong, and the doctors are telling you that something's wrong, it's all you can think about. Well, there are people in the congregations who are suffering with either this or something similar that may be terminal, and that's all they can think about. And so they're having dreams too, but they don't see themselves as spiritual in many of these cases. And so they're having the same kind of dreams, but they don't see it as a announcement that they're going to be healed. They're not sharing with other people, "Hey, I had this dream, and oh, this tells me by God that I'm going to be healed," because they don't see it this way. But the minister does, and yet many of those same people will look at the minister and think, "Oh, well, he says he's spiritual. I will shut off all critical thought and not compare my situation with his," and realize that, yeah, he had a dream. Yes, I had a dream, or whatever it was. Sometimes it's even medication. I'm taking a medication and I saw a vision. Well, some of these medications that they give you will cause this kind of thing.
I'm on a drug that I take morning and night, and I take it right before I go to bed. And the side effect is nightmares. And I pray that God bridles the nightmare. That's what I do. But there's your body's made up of a chemical body, so it's got its... Satan uses what he can to get into that. So I'm in a relaxed state. And so in that state, he attacks through that dimension. This very morning, knowing this is a sermon that I'm preaching, this very moment, this morning, I'm working as a preacher with some very precious friends as a preacher, and these demons are screaming to me.
I'm not saying that the minister didn't, you know, that's between him and God. But the problem that I see is that he's announcing it in this way when there are other people who may be in just as dire of a situation. And again, he's robbing them of their hope whenever he's in this situation. The same people could have a community of supporters around them. "Hey, you're really sick. I see that your medication's making you tired, the radiation treatments, whatever it is. Can I make food for your family? Do you mind if I come over and fold your clothes?" I have been in churches after leaving the cult where the minister would actually get up and say things like this from behind the pulpit. Hey, sister so-and-so is really, really struggling, and she's in our audience today if you want to give her a hug on the way out, and we'd really like for you to get band together and help the family, help support them. That's not what's happening here. So in effect, the minister is robbing the people, and he's using himself as the example to rob them of the community that they could be having.
Right. And one of the things that's interesting, especially as it pertains to this minister with the cancer, this minister has for many years presented themselves as though they are a dreamer and that they have supernatural dreams. And they can even, read people's thoughts and like I don't know if it's an angel or God speaks directly to them and tells them secrets that no one knows about people. And so when you look at it through that lens, the people in this congregation have been very trained that this minister has supernatural dreams. And so when the minister goes and tells the church about this dream, the minister doesn't have to say it's supernatural. The minister doesn't have to say it's thus saith the Lord. If the people have been conditioned to think that all these dreams that he speaks are supernatural, or they have a supernatural meaning, or that they're of God, then the people are going to receive it that way. And so sometimes you don't even have to say it to get the same effect. So it's an interesting thing that begins to go on, a year after this cancer is announced. There's a lot of things that proceed to go on. At this point, there's a lot of back and forth. There's a lot of reports that I feel better one day, or I'm really, it's just the normal things you'd think you're going to hear when someone has an illness like this. It's like, some days are better than others. Some days are really bad and it's a struggle to be here, but by God's grace, I'm still here. But moving forward into this year, now we're 4 years with this cancer, and a lot of people around the movement have been praying for this minister, hoping that he will get well, and that God will, heal him completely of his cancer and give him many more years to preach. Something interesting happens. The doctors tell him, according to him, that he has cancer in his eyes. Now, if you'll remember, early on in the first year, that was something that was going on. I have cancer in my eyes. I don't have cancer in my eyes. Now, there's a report out that he does have cancer in his eyes, and a bunch of ministers rush up to him to have special meetings, and there's all these things going on. And then after all this happens, there's a prayer line that the ministers are praying for this minister on the platform. And then they get up in front of the congregation, and it's the minister's wife this time speaking and saying that they went to the doctor again, and that, there is no cancer, in his eyes. And that, he's got lesions in his eyes, but it's not cancer.
And so he comes back in and he says, "Let me tell you, this is miscommunication." He said, "There is no cancer in your eyes."
If it makes you, the person feel better, maybe it's not so bad. But at the same time, I've been in situations where similar things have been used to build up a minister into a spot where, they command people's faith and they command people's adoration. And, it's interesting in one way, and another way, it's kind of sad.
It is sad, James, and a lot of people I know are going to ask, why are you doing this episode? Are you picking on this minister? We're definitely not. In fact, part of the reason why we're doing this now instead of, after whatever happens, is that we don't want it to be seen as though we are belittling the person and further hurting the family. We hope that this minister gets better. I hope he gets better. You know, I really do. I don't want to come back later if something were to happen and then do this episode, because then it would be seen as even, you know, far worse than it is now. We hope he gets better, but historically, this is a good way to represent what happens in these divine healing cults, especially when leadership has something like this happen. It's going to continue to go back and forth and back and forth. And we have many more clips. We could go through many different scenarios where a doctor found some glimmer of hope, and then the hope turns into a revelation, and divine healing has just occurred until the next incident in the, you know, the episode with the cancer, because that's the nature of cancer. It gets better, it gets worse. If you're in stage four, it may be terminal. But the way that this is presented to the people is any faint glimmer of hope or change, it's used to excite the people and keep them further interested into this gospel of divine healing.
Right. And, you know, the thing about it is that what's so sad about convincing people that if they just have an honest communication about what's going on in their body, that it's going to hinder their faith, you know, because if people were able to freely talk about these things, I mean, especially if this is the last moments that they have with their family, with their loved ones, with the people they care about, living in fear that the smallest misstep could make you lose your healing is just another way to destroy the person mentally, but before, with their last moments, you know, let those last moments be surrounded by people they care about, people who fill their life with joy, not constantly living in fear that they're going to lose their healing and that, you know, the cancer's gone, but, you know, maybe, you know, maybe I did something that pleases God. Now the cancer's back. You know, it's so sad. And that, you know, sometimes you don't, it's not just the people in the congregation who go through this, but sometimes it's the ministers, you know, because some of these ministers, while some of them do know that it's a fraud and they're preaching a fraud, some of them have been in it all their lives and they truly believe that this is the truth, and they're trying to their best to live up to what they believe is the truth of the hour and what they need to do to get well. And it's sad to see anybody captured by this fraud, because the William Branham's message is a fraud, and it leads people into so much pain, especially in something subterminal as cancer, with all the things he said that were completely wrong about even the medical stuff about cancer. If a prophet could know all these secrets, why would God let him spread so much false information about something like cancer? Because it's not helpful to people. It doesn't help make them well. It just goes to hurt them even more while they're trying to find some glimmer of hope in something that in some situations, in a lot of situations, doesn't have a good outcome at the end of it.
Absolutely. And I'm giving this minister the benefit of the doubt, because hopefully he has a good heart and hopefully he is saying all of these things because that's how he was indoctrinated and he believes it. There are a number of ministers that I can assure you do not believe it. And that's, you know, that's problematic. But in this case, we hope he does get better. And we, you know, I pray for him in the same way that his church prays for him. But to show the example of what happens whenever you have a gospel of divine healing instead of the gospel of Jesus Christ and how it can affect the church, we wanted to have this episode. So if you have weird doctrines that you'd like for us to discuss on the show, you can contact us on the web. You can find us at william-branham.org. For an in-depth look of the dangers of being in these groups, read Weaponized Religion, From Latter Rain to Colonia Dignidad, available on Amazon, Kindle, and Audible.